listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of your weekly European football podcast. I'm Rob Daly. This week, La Liga is back underway after a brief winter break. So we discuss the season there so far, as Gary Neville's Valencia deny Real Madrid a win. We also examine the opening months of Serie A as that's starting up again this week. Our reviews will feature some of the top European football journalists who've guested over the past few months on the show. And as the transfer window reopens, we'll bring you rumours from the continent. Chicharito, Felipe Anderson, Ibrahimovic and Batshuayi all discussed.
This is Football in Europe.
Chris Parrott alongside me as always. Chris, nice to review what's happened in the season so far.
Yeah, all those stories which were big at the time that can be forgotten a couple of months later. It's nice to look at them again and see and really see where teams are now, but where they might have been in, I don't know, October, September, how they started the season, etc.
So we're going to split our review over 2 weeks. We'll look at Liga and the Bundesliga in a bit more depth next week. Chris, we've had a few tweets in on our Team of the Year podcast. Team of the Season so far, I should say, podcast that we did last week. My team, just to remind people, was Navas, Marcos Alonso, Aurier, Thiago Silva, Godin, Busquets, Pjanic, Neymar, Douglas Costa, Aubameyang, Lewandowski, and your team was...
Navas in goal as well. Back four of Alaba, Mario Fernandes, Miranda and Thiago Silva. Sergio Busquets as the holding midfielder. Then Neymar on the left, Müller on the right, Alex Teixeira behind two strikers, Suarez and Aubameyang.
So here are some of the tweets that we've had in on this subject. Adam Riley says on the Suarez-Lewandowski debate, because we both picked different strikers to play alongside Aubameyang so far, given their great form this season. He says Lewandowski ahead of Suarez purely because he doesn't drift wide as much, which is an important focal point for Bayern. But Stuart tweeted in to say that Luis Suarez gets big goals in big games. And I think that's a fair comment as well, Chris.
Yeah, they're different players. And I went for a very mobile front five, you see, so I didn't need a focal point. I was going for that Barcelona madness of just basically front three plays wherever.
La Liga Gav, like my selection of Godin over Miranda. Tom Scholes felt Di Maria should have got picked because of his form for Paris Saint-Germain. And Rich Allen has picked out Lassana Diarra. He hasn't played much football for a long time, but says he's bossed the midfield for Marseille, and he really has done this season. Chris, we've been asking people for their highlights of the season so far, and we've had some nice tweets in on this subject.
Yeah, Björk says the unbelievable season of the old Swedish giant IFK Norrköping. Youngest team in the league, winning the title in front of Malmö, of course, who finished well down in Sweden. That was a great win, that, for Norrköping. Michael Clark says Andres Iniesta's performance against Madrid in their Clásico win. Can't argue with that. I think maybe more generally, Barcelona's performance in that El Clásico game against Real Madrid was probably, for me, the standout performance of the season so far. I know it's the biggest game, but they were marvellous. They were just exceptional.
Keep your tweets coming in on FIE Podcast, and please leave us a review on iTunes. Some people did that this week. It's very kind of you. So we'll talk transfer rumours later on in the show. That's actually what we want you to tweet about for next week's show. At FIE Podcast, which clubs do you think really need to do business, transfer business in January, and why? So, Chris, we're going to review La Liga so far this season. First of all, there has been some games. I only had a 10-day winter break in Spain. And they started playing, I think, on New Year's Eve and even the 30th of December. Pepe Mel's under immense pressure at the moment with Real Betis, losing two matches in a row since that winter break. They were beaten 4-0 by Barcelona away. No shame in that, in truth. But then they were beaten by that scoreline by Eibar at home. Betis play Sevilla in the local derby in the Copa del Rey this week. Atletico have gone 2 points clear after late wins over Rayo Vallecano and Levante. Well, Chris, it was a game that was many people were talking about last night. Anyway, Real Madrid playing Valencia, having beaten Sociedad days before. Real Madrid went to Gary Neville's Valencia, and for you, it was one of your games of the season.
It was incredible. It was unrelenting. It was mad. There wasn't an awful lot of defending. Pepe did his usual marking error for Valencia's equaliser. Gave away a penalty. Moreover, it was just a thrilling game. It finished 2-2. Valencia got a very late equaliser, a minute after Gareth Bale had scored a brilliant header to put Real Madrid ahead. And then after that, and bearing in mind that equaliser came in the 83rd minute, If it had finished 4-4, no one could have argued. Negredo missed a one-on-one in the last minute, and then Bale missed a chance after that. It was a breathtaking end. But very good point for Gary Neville, who has really not had it his own way. And I think, Guillaume Balaga was very critical on Sky about Real Madrid's performance, having gone 1-0 up. He basically said that in previous years, previous teams would have gone on and killed Valencia. They were short of confidence. They haven't won for a long time in Liga. And they didn't. They got 1-0 up and they sat back for whatever reason. That's not the Real Madrid way, and it didn't suit them very well because Valencia got a point.
Elsewhere in Spain, Barca, after a 4-0 win over Real Betis, drew 0-0 with Espanyol in the derby. Barca play Espanyol again in the Copa del Rey this week, and it's the first match, I believe, that Arda Turan and Alex Vidal can play as the transfer ban comes to an end. Barcelona are unbeaten in 18, but Atletico atop. So Chris, let's start our look at La Liga so far this season.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
So the La Liga football season started with Barcelona out to defend their title. They got that dramatic 5-4 UEFA Super Cup win against Sevilla, a game in which Pedro grabbed the winner. But then they were beaten by Bilbao in the Spanish Super Cup. You remember they actually lost 4-0 in the first leg with Arit Adarith performing really well and scoring lots of goals over the course of the entire tie. And despite the fact that Barcelona started the league reasonably strongly, they did have defensive wobbles. And even before Lionel Messi picked up an injury, they were beaten 4-1 by Celta Vigo. But there were serious concerns about just to what extent the Blaugrana season would derail once Lionel Messi picked up an injury against Las Palmas, a knee injury back in September. Here's what ESPN's Spanish football correspondent Dermot Corrigan said at the time.
Yeah, it was really strange on Saturday because people even around the camp now or people who I know seem to be more worried about how Messi was getting on than whether Barca were going to win the game or not. The game suddenly became an afterthought on the afternoon to see how Messi's injury was. But it's just that Messi's such a huge figure around the club. He dominates everything. And when Messi's not there, or even if he's watching in the stand or whatever, that becomes the story rather than even when you have people like Neymar or Suarez who should in theory be able to step up and beat Getafe. Messi not being there just adds that little bit of extra uncertainty to what's going to happen.
So in the absence of Messi, who would end up being out for roughly 8 weeks, I think it was, in the end before he returned in that 4-0 Clasico win, which we'll get onto in a moment, they actually, in truth, managed to cope without him, Chris, thanks to two star players.
Yeah, I think they answered a lot of questions, actually. Maybe the only question that remained after they won the Champions League last season was, what happens if Messi isn't there? Well, quite simply, Neymar in particular and Suarez stepped up. Didn't they score all of the goals they scored in Liga while Messi was out? They were immense together. That partnership just blossomed between them. Munir came in, another couple of players did as well up front. In particular, Neymar. I know I mentioned this before. I think he really stepped up. He's been that golden boy of Brazilian football for forever, really, despite the fact he's so young. And I think he really came to the fore. And, you know, it's always been Messi and Ronaldo. And I think Neymar, you can put him in that very, very top bracket of players now.
And for the season for Real Madrid, it started with some fans not happy with the fact that Rafa Benitez was appointed their manager, but the David De Gea saga at the end of August was a major talking point as he ended up not joining the club.
Yeah, due to, who knows what went on. It was something about a late email, or it was all rather murky, but Keylor Navas was outstanding, wasn't he, at the start of the season. Benitez was he's a coach that I think he gets unfair criticism. He's won a lot. Carlo Ancelotti was loved, obviously. He brought Ledesma to Real Madrid. Benitez started the season pretty well. Then they were beaten, weren't they? I think Keylor Navas was out for a couple of games and that derailed
him a
little
bit. Yeah, he picked up an injury,
He was brilliant. And thank goodness that David De Gea business has gone away. Not for too long, I don't think. I imagine next summer it'll be back on the cards. Real Madrid's season's been an interesting one. They're not top. They've lost some big games, and I think that's a problem. You know, they're expected to win every week, but they lost to Barcelona so emphatically, and that basically sums up their first half of the season. They're not top. They're still in the title race, but if you lose El Clasico, in such a manner, then of course there's going to be questions.
Yeah, beaten 4-0 at home by Barcelona, and it was the outstanding result probably of the La Liga season so far. Chris, what were your reflections on the way that the Barcelona went about getting that 4-0 win at the Bernabeu? Because, I mean, Messi didn't even start. He was on the bench and came on coming back from that injury.
Yeah, they were simply better in every department. And that, I think that's the worry. And that's why Benitez is under pressure. But we spoke about it. Perez, the president, is under pressure as well. Because it was only in 2014 that they won the Champions League. And if you fast forward 18 months, they do look well behind Barcelona at the moment.
OK, so at the time, we spoke to Diario sport journalist Sam Marsden after the Clásico, and here were his thoughts on Rafa Benitez's team selection and his future after that result.
The concern is that he kind of did heed people wanted. He stuck with sort of Casemiro in this system, where he's been a little bit more defensive this season. Whatever people say, he's a slightly more defensive manager. Obviously, Madrid, they've got great players. It's not defensive system. It's just slightly more defensive than maybe what Madrid have been used to. And then he's thrown that out the window for the Clásico, sort of to popular demand to play a midfield of James, Modric and Cruz, which is arguably costing the game when you see the complete space they've lost in midfield. I feel a bit sorry for him in a way as well, because he's been up against it from the start and all of a sudden his job's on the line. I don't think he's going to be sacked right now, but it's impossible really. Like, if you ask me today if you can see him last into the end of the season, I'd say it's impossible.
Sam Marsden there. But Chris, despite that pressure on Benitez, you, and I'll counter your argument a little bit, but you've been impressed with LBBC, the front three for Real Madrid this season.
Well, the back end anyway. You know, they beat Malmo 8-0, Rayo Vallecano 10-2. There are signs. They're nowhere near what they were a couple of seasons ago under Ancelotti when they won them the Champions League. But even against Valencia, actually, they starting to combine very nicely. I think Bale looks back in form, 7-6, I think. As I mentioned, they're no Messi, Suarez, Neymar yet, but there are signs that they might be getting back, which for the rest of the season for Real Madrid is crucial.
We've talked a lot about the extent of Cristiano Ronaldo's decline, and he's still scoring an outrageous number of goals. But here are his goals stats from this season. So he scored 6 against Malmo, scored 5 against Espanyol, got 5 against Shakhtar over the course of 2 games. Vallecano, Sociedad, Levante, Celta Vigo, Las Palmas, Eibar and Getafe, he's all scored against. He hasn't scored against Bilbao, Atletico, Paris Saint-Germain in 2 matches this season, Sevilla, Barcelona, Villarreal and Valencia. And I just wonder if he's not scoring in the big games anymore.
I'm not brave enough to write Cristiano Ronaldo off yet. And as I said, I think that front three are beginning to combine very nicely again. And I wouldn't write Real Madrid off for the Liga title, and I wouldn't write them off for the Champions League yet either.
4 points off top spot at the moment, Real Madrid, because top spot belongs to their city rivals, Atletico. It's always annoying when you hear the expression, they've quietly gone about their business, but Atletico have, and they are top, doing exceptionally well.
They are. I mean, we all know about Diego Simeone. The wider point, it really is fantastic to have a three-horse race in Spain. It's been a long, long time since a team consistently has challenged and even beaten them. 2 years ago, Atletico won the title, and they're very well placed to do it again. They have, it's again, to come back to what you said, you're almost demeaning to them to be like, oh, they have such great team spirit, etc. They're a damn good team. And that's why they reached the Champions League final a couple of seasons ago. If ever a team is built in somebody's spirit, it's him. And they have a sprinkling of gold dust of the likes of Antoine Griezmann, who's been outstanding, one of the best players in Europe, I think, this season. And it's interesting because they are top, but I think I'm right in saying they've picked up 1 point from their home games against Real Madrid and Barcelona. So
yeah,
the real test comes, I think they go away later this month to the Nou Camp, if they can go there. And then in February, they go away to the Bernabeu as well. But you know what? When they're top and they don't have to chase games, I think that's when Atletico are at their best. When teams have to beat them, because if they get a point in those games, that's a great result. They'll probably still be top. And they can play that, ugly is the wrong word, but that combative style, they can play on the counter, which has been so effective. Whereas if they have to go and chase teams and try and beat them, in particular Barca and Real Madrid, I wonder if that's where they come unstuck. So they're wonderfully placed.
I think the concern for Simeone will be that his signings have made little difference to his team. That all that money that they spent in the summer, and in particular on the likes of Jackson Martinez and Luciano Vietto, who've scored three league goals between them. That would probably be the one concern for Diego Simeone at this point. British managers, Chris, in La Liga. We'll talk about David Moyes getting sacked at Sociedad in a moment, but Gary Neville at Valencia so far. We've already talked a little bit about how his team got on against Real Madrid at the weekend, but his appointment to replace Nuno after Valencia fans were very unhappy certainly wasn't met with open arms in Spain. There was eyebrows raised over that appointment.
Yeah, and no surprise, because it was his first coaching job, and he's gone from being a pundit, okay, he's part of the England coaching setup, to being head coach at Valencia, an enormous team. I say again, it's not, you know, Granada or Las Palmas or something, it's Valencia. And I think the question was, did he get it because he was the best man for the job, or did he get it because of his connections with the owner? There were better qualified people to have it, but it's not been the best start. They were good against Real Madrid, actually. His quotes have been really interesting. So he did an interview with Sky where he was very, very honest. And he said as much. He said, I don't want to dance around issues because I saw when I worked in the media people doing that. I think he said it made them cringe. And he said he was asked what his master plan was, because he has so many facets to his job, doesn't he? He's a businessman, he's a pundit, he's a coach. And he said long term, it's not management. That was taken as 6 months, which I don't think is true. He clarified it after the Real Madrid game and said, I'm talking 15, 20 years. My long term goal isn't management. That's a very interesting thing to say. Even if you think it, your head coach at the moment. So saying your long-term goal isn't that is a bit odd. And I think if I was a Valencia fan, I think that would worry me a little.
Well, he's only managed to pick up 3 points from 4 La Liga games in charge. So Valencia really need to turn around this season. 10th in the table, they have been one of the disappointing stories of the season so far, as have Sevilla. They're mid-table with just 26 points from 18 games. But David Moyes getting sacked at Real Sociedad was one of the major talking points of the season so far. Sociedad very poor in the opening stages of the La Liga campaign, and after a few months, Moyes was sacked by the club. At the time, we spoke to Sky Sports Spanish football expert Guillaume Balague, who was one of those breaking the news about Moyes going.
I feel that he wasn't doing the job that they expected. There's been warnings along the way. What I would take out of that is for British coaches to have a look at it very closely and to realise why it has happened, why he couldn't succeed, what was missing, not only in the personal decisions of David Moyes, but also generally in the culture that made him a coach. Why is he insufficient when he goes to Real Sociedad? Why does he do well at Everton and even get signed by Manchester United, let's not forget, but then goes to Real Sociedad, it doesn't work. And I think that tells you a lot about the culture of British coaching. And I think there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from there. Don't blame just the club. Don't blame just David Moyes. Is there anything else that has made this happen?
And I think it was a good point that Guillaume Balague was alluding to at the time about how British managers might look at going abroad and how they deal with going abroad in future. And I think some of the criticism of Moyes saying he didn't embrace the culture simply wasn't true. I think he did embrace the culture. Did he embrace the footballing culture enough might be more the question. And Chris, some of the surprise packages of the season, not necessarily surprises, but some of the most impressive teams of the season, certainly Celta Vigo, Deportivo and Villarreal, who are all around the European places.
Yeah, and all have an enormous opportunity to get that fourth spot in Champions League football, because we mentioned Sevilla and Valencia, who would have been favourites behind the two Madrid clubs and Barca. They haven't had good seasons so far. Villarreal, particularly impressive. You know, they're in wonderful form. Great win away, actually, at the weekend against Depor. Last gasp goal from Bruno. That could be an enormous win in the race for fourth. Celta have played with this carefree attitude. They've been thoroughly entertaining. They walloped Barcelona at home. That was a standout performance.
Nice use of wallop,
yeah,
by the way.
Walloped. And they've all had excellent campaigns so far. And particularly Villarreal, I think, when they were relegated, this fairy tale story of a tiny team from a tiny town, you know, reaching the Champions League semi-finals, consistently beating the big boys in Spain. You wondered whether that was that when they got relegated a couple of years ago. Well, no, they came back up and they're back on course. They're through in the Europa League and they're back on course for Champions League football. They're nowhere near as big as the two Madrid sides or Barca.
And some of the players who've really impressed this season, Nolito, whose form drop-off in form somewhat has coincided with Celta Vigo dropping out of the top four, but he does have 8 goals this season and has been linked with a return to Barcelona. Javi Guerrero with his 9 goals for Rayo Vallecano as well. Borja Bastón with 9 for Eibar this season. And Agüero as well with 12 for Real Sociedad despite their struggles this season. They're 14th in the table at this point. Adarith as well, unlikely to get a call up for the Spain national team despite his great form for Bilbao because of his age. And Vicente Del Bosque has been pretty open about that. So that's our review of the La Liga season so far. Before we look at Serie A and some of the transfer rumours doing the rounds across the continent, let's have a quick roundup of where some of the other European leagues are at this stage in the season. In Portugal, Jorge Jesus leaving Benfica for Lisbon rival Sporting was the major story of the summer, and it's a narrative that dominated the first half of the season. It all culminated in truth in Jesus making his return to Benfica with Sporting in October in the league. BBC journalist Steve Crossman watched it as Sporting won 3-0.
Pandemonium in the stands. You know, I was looking down at the pitch after about 10 minutes. The technical area of Jorge Jesus was littered with bits of paper and all kinds of stuff that the fans had just thrown at him. You can't be surprised by that. I mean, even Benfica fans that I've spoken to here have said, you know, we've got great respect for what he did for us, but that has to go. This is not a friendly rivalry. A couple of years ago, Sporting fans, you know, set fire to part of the Benfica stadium. It is a derby with a ferocious feeling to it.
Jesus has now beaten his former employers 3 times, no less, while his Sporting side beat Porto 2-0 at the weekend as well to move to top spot in the table. Porto fans have been unhappy, and in particular with their Champions League exit. From Portuguese clubs to a Portuguese manager, André Villas-Boas announced in September he'd be stepping down as Zenit head coach at the end of the season. He's been clearly unhappy about the new rules on a limit on the number of foreigners allowed in a team in Russia, and his frustration in one game got the better of him in particular. As Zenit faced Krylia Sovetov, he pushed an official. Goal.com journalist Elliot Rothwell told us how an announcement about leaving wasn't a big surprise.
He's not settled into life in Russia particularly well. He still does all of his interviews with the Russian press with a translator, which hasn't helped his relationship with them. I mean, he obviously had quite a frosty relationship with the English press when he was at Chelsea and Tottenham, and he doesn't really have seemed to improve on that level in Russia. His family still live in Portugal. They never moved to Russia with him. His wife gave birth to a new child, and he'd been back to Portugal. And I think that played into part of the frustration and the anger that he had with what was quite an innocuous decision that was the catalyst for his outburst.
Despite the troubles, AVB guided his side to 5 wins from 6 in the Champions League group stage. In fact, form improved after Villas-Boas revealed he planned to leave. Guardian writer Jonathan Wilson believes he has proved his qualities as a coach.
I'm really glad for him. I thought we, as an, you know, in terms of English football culture, threatened pretty badly. He inherited a Chelsea squad that was all but unmanageable. And maybe his own personality didn't help, but I think it was a hugely difficult job. That I think in pure football terms, I think he's a very, very interesting coach. I think it's very easy to underrate what he did with Porto. And it's good to see Zenit doing well. I mean, I think they should have... They've underperformed in the last 3 or 4 years, and I think it's important that you have a club who doesn't come from England, France, Germany, Spain or Italy that can challenge, and okay, maybe they probably won't win it, but maybe they can get to a quarter-final or semi-final and remind people that there is life outside of Western Europe.
The Russian national team meanwhile qualified for Euro 2016 thanks to Leonid Slutsky moonlighting as head coach while still in charge of CSKA Moscow. Replacing Fabio Capello seemed easy for him as he saved Russia's disastrous campaign. But CSKA, meanwhile, have faltered in the latter weeks of the first half of the season while holding on to top spot. In Belgium, Gent continue to amaze, having qualified for the round of 16 in the Champions League in their debut season. They're top in Belgium while Standard Liège, the huge club, have pulled themselves off the bottom of the table thanks to a change in manager. Form improved under Yannick Ferreira dramatically. Oostend, meanwhile, remain only 5 points off top. They're one of the stories of the season, according to ESPN FC journalist Mark Rodden.
not a team with a great tradition. They've spent a lot of time in the second division. They are a bit of a nouveau riche club in Belgium because Marc Kuka, who's got some involvement with Lille as well, is their chairman. He's a man who made his money through the pharmaceutical industry. He's put a lot of money into them, and you know, they've got guys on big contracts. Zoran Cyriak, who came in from Anderlecht over the summer.
And in Ukraine, despite the ongoing troubles in Donetsk forcing Shakhtar out of their city, they're joint top with Dinamo Kiev after 16 games. Star player Alex Cechera has been their key man this season and is likely to earn a big money move after 22 goals in 16 league outings. Those are some of the major talking points from Ukraine, Russia, Portugal and Belgium so far this season. Next week, the Netherlands, Ukraine, Greece, Turkey and Ireland.
This is Football in Europe Transfer Talk.
Oh, the transfer window's open again, thank God. Chris, we're going to talk about some rumours now.
Yeah.
And we will start with...
Thomas Müller? Oh, no, wait a minute, he signed a new deal.
Last we can put that one to bed. But we can't put this one to bed for some unknown reason. Neymar to Manchester United doing the rounds again.
Yeah, I mean, look, the papers allege it's because he's stalled on a new contract. If he leaves Barcelona, most clubs in Europe will try and sign him. So if it's this, if it's a case of £140 million, I can guarantee you that Bayern, Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester City, Manchester United, anyone that has the money would try and sign him. Real Madrid would probably try and sign him. If Barcelona let him go, they're absolutely bonkers because he's, you know...
But they won't.
It's all hearsay. It's all posturing on both sides because he wants a whopping great new deal, which he'll get because Barcelona know they cannot afford to lose Neymar. And I would imagine he wants to be paid as much as Messi.
So what about Ibrahimovic? Because his time at Paris Saint-Germain may be coming to an end. I think he has 6 months on his current deal. Mm. What's the talk about where he could end up?
There was a report last week that he wants to go back to San Siro, to either Milan or Inter. The Premier League is this week's, I think his agent says he'd be well suited to the Premier League, which is almost certainly true. I'd love to see him in the Premier League. He's older now. That myth that he never played well against English teams was emphatically put to bed when he scored those goals against Arsenal. But if he leaves Paris Saint-Germain, then yeah, you can see him coming to the Premier League.
Some other rumours doing the rounds at the moment. Rudi Völler, the Leverkusen director, says that the club will not be selling Javier Hernandez. He was linked with Arsenal, I saw by some papers. I cannot see that happening. And I can't see Michy Batshuayi, the brilliant Marseille striker, going anywhere in January. He's been linked with Tottenham.
Really?
Yeah, I'd be amazed. Oh, you think he could go this month?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's Marseille. I don't think they have the spending power. We saw in the summer, didn't we? Tottenham in particular, if they really want Batshuayi, I think they'd probably get him. And they do need a striker because they only really have Harry Kane. And if he gets injured, you know, they're on for top four, Tottenham. So they need to strengthen in that position.
Liverpool are expected to wrap up the signing of Marco Grujic, a player we've talked about before on the show from Red Star. And Felipe Anderson to Manchester United's another one, Chris.
According to the papers, United willing to pay £30 million. Can sort of see it. He's 22. He fits that mould of players they've signed. You wonder how many more sort of attacking midfield slash wingers they need because they're fairly well set. But yeah, I can see that happening. He's a very exciting player. I wonder if he might think that it's time to leave Lazio as well.
OK, so tweet us who you think needs to do some transfer business using FIE podcast. And we'll continue to look at some of these through the January transfer window. Chris, did you see this brilliant Cristiano Ronaldo interview from the weekend? Yeah, he was talking about how he doesn't have... people think he has an easy life, but he doesn't really because he wanted to go to a boxing fight in Las Vegas and take his friends and family, but he couldn't because he didn't have the time. He says, "I'm not going to cry about it now because I'm making a sacrifice," in inverted commas, "but after, I want to live like a king." When he retires, he wants to live like a king. Fair enough, Cristiano Ronaldo. He says he has no intention to go into coaching or to be a sporting director or anything like that. Chris, in the French Cup this weekend, very early rounds, Liga hasn't got back underway. Paris Saint-Germain are through after a narrow victory against a fourth-tier amateur team, only beating them 1-0 thanks to an Ibrahimovic goal. There were big scoreline wins for Lyon, Toulouse and Monaco. Monaco winning 10-2. An eventful first half for one player in particular.
Yeah, Traore, brilliant. Score four goals and get yourself sent off.
all in the first half against amateur side St Jean Balieu.
I'm pleased that he's we're talking about him, because remember when he went to Everton? He's a very good player. He got a dreadful injury. Yeah, I mean, four goals sent off. The French Cup is, of all the cups, maybe the most bonkers. You know, you only have to look at Calais. Is it Amiens reached the final? There's like mad shocks. And we've already talked about how the colonies play as well.
So it's worth explaining again. People might not have heard that show.
So earlier on anyway, a team from Brittany, I think, a lowly team, but they got drawn away to Tahiti, a team in Tahiti. You get some incredible away days. And the French Cup's great. I could watch the French Cup all day long. And actually, did you see the St Etienne goalkeeper, Ruffier? Right. He's in trouble. So they squeaked past a very small side as well, and on penalties. And he was the hero. But then he sort of went up to the player that missed it and gave him a mouthful.
Oh.
And you're just like, I mean, you're playing in Ligue 1. You should have beaten them comfortably. Let's not, don't kick off. However annoying they've been in the game, it was just a low blow. A very low blow. He said something like, you're a clown. And he might have said, watch me in Europe in the new year.
Martin Kianru van Nistelrooy is the one that always comes to mind. Also, there was very sad news as well this week. You may have seen this. The former Wigan defender, Steve Gahuri, died at the age of 34. He was at Wigan from 2010 to 2012. And on December the 12th, Gahuri was reported missing after attending a Christmas party of his German club, Steinbach. He was supposed to be visiting friends and family in Paris, but his body was found in the river Rhine in the western city of Krefeld. A very sad story. Wigan tweeted their condolences to his family as well. So I'm sure we'll find out more details about that in the coming weeks. So, Chris, we've done our season review so far of La Liga, and we're going to do Serie A next.
Football in Europe.
The most surprising thing about the start of the Italian season was how disappointing Juve were in the opening week, considering they were the defending Italian champions and they had reached the Champions League final, losing out to Barcelona. But they only picked up 1 point from the opening three games. And at the time, we spoke to BT Sport commentator Adam Summerton and a Serie A expert about Juve's misfortunes.
They've taken out of that side three key players in terms of experience and trophies won, three real winners. The biggest miss for me is Tevez, because he was so important to the way that they played, and with the energy and the endeavour that he had in that final third and the goals, they were always going to miss him. There's always going to be that period of adjustment. I still think that we'll see them come back. I still think that we'll see them be front runners in terms of the title race.
And credit to Adam, in fairness, for saying that at the time, because many people were writing Juventus off. They drew 1-1 at home to Frosinone in one of the stories of the season, newly promoted Frosinone and Juve fan Leonardo Blanchard, who actually travelled to Berlin for the Champions League final, got the equaliser in that game against the club he loves in Juventus. And also they suffered a 1-0 defeat to Sassuolo, which really set them back in terms of their title challenge. But Chris, you believe there has been one major turning point, because Juve are at this point in January back in the title race.
Yeah, I think it's the Turin derby. They have an incredible record against Torino. Last minute winner, Juan Cuadrado got the goal. Former Chelsea man, or the current Chelsea man.
That at the end of October.
End of October. And basically went on from there and haven't lost very many games since. I think they might have won every game domestically since then. So remarkable turnaround. Well, we say remarkable. They always had the players. Adam alluded there. They lost big players in the summer, but it took them a bit of time. Massive credit to Max Allegri again, who I don't know if he proved the doubters wrong. He didn't have many doubters after last season and that incredible campaign. But, you know, we saw the likes of Jose Mourinho not being able to turn around a difficult situation. Well, Allegri has for Juve, and all credit to him for doing it.
Paolo Sousa has done a great job with Fiorentina, because they sit second in the table, only a point behind Inter. And I think a few eyebrows were raised when Sosa got the Fiorentina job.
Yeah, did very well at Maccabi Tel Aviv and at Basel. And he's been brilliant there. Inspired signing of Nikola Kalinic, who's banged in the goals. 10 he's got in Serie A. Josip Iličić has scored goals from midfield. And they're in the title race, absolutely. They lost to Juve just before the winter break, which was a damaging defeat. But we spoke about it week in, week out, because there was a stage when the Serie A title leaders was changing literally every week. And it's anybody's title, and Fiorentina are bang in there. And Sosa, is a man who, you know, you just wonder. Imagine he won the title with Fiorentina, where he might go.
Yeah, it would be an extraordinary achievement. They're only a point behind league leaders Inter so far this season. Inter under Roberto Mancini, his first full season back in charge of Inter, because he took over, I think it was midway through last season. But what he's done, Chris, is defensively shore up Inter ahead of everything else.
Yeah, their title challenge is built upon 1-0 victories. It's a phenomenal amount of games they have won. 1-0. They actually scored some big goals late on, 7, I think, in their last two domestic games. They thumped Udinese, which, in terms of, if you're looking ahead, positive signs. But they'll be there or thereabouts. Mancini knows how to win the Scudetto at Inter, and he's gone in there again after his spell at Galatasaray, and he's got them moving. Which the same can't be said for the other Milan team, AC, who continue to struggle despite spending big bucks in the summer.
Yeah, Carlos Bacca is one of the top scorers in Italy this season for Milan. Mario Balotelli's been injured for much of the season since his loan move from Liverpool. But Milan well off the pace in terms of the top five anyway at the moment in the league this season. And there will be continued pressure on the manager there, I'm sure, over the course of the campaign. For Roma, I mean, a big drop off for Rudy Garcia's team. He's been under a lot of pressure. There's talk that he could have gone or will go. Roma have dropped to fifth in the table. They just about squeezed through to the round of 16 in the Champions League. They had that moment where fans, so unhappy with the way that Roma were playing, left carrots outside the training ground, in particular after they were thumped by Barcelona in the Champions League. And it was a message that rabbits are seen as cowardly in Italy. Roberto Donadoni doing a good job at Bologna since he took over there. He's managed to pull them a little bit away from the relegation zone. But Napoli are one of the stories of the season too. Mauricio Sarri taking charge, and he's got them into third in the table, only a point behind Inter. Earlier in the season, we spoke to Italian football expert and Evening Standard writer Tom Colomossi on fortunes in Naples.
It's completely neutral, but I do hope that they win the league, just because I think they're great to watch. And Mauricio Sarri is a fantastic story, isn't he? The number of clubs he coached at so many low levels before he even made it to Serie A with Empoli, and then earning his chance here and doing very well. I think it's great to see. And it rather shows up a bit, the work of Rafael Benitez, certainly in the league, because I think they've been much better in the league than they ever were under Benitez. And Benitez has built a reputation, rightly, as one of the best coaches around. So I hope that this draw and their dodgy result at Bologna last week when they lost 3-2, I hope that's not the start of a bit of a decline for them. I do wonder if they're a bit reliant on Higuain, but I'm confident there's enough there for them to rebuild and really challenge Inter and Juventus over the rest of the season.
Tom Colomossi there on Napoli's chances of winning the league. And Gonzalo Higuain has scored 16 league goals, all from open play. The nearest player to him is Sampdoria's brilliant Italian international, Eder, who has 10 goals. 3 of those have been penalties. Higuain, far and away, the best goal-getter in Italy this season. Chris, I'm off to Juventus against Hellas Verona on Wednesday. I'm off to Turin. And also Genoa play Sampdoria in one of the great derbies of Italian football on Tuesday. So we'll look at that as well, the Derby della Laterna, the Derby of the Lighthouse, as that one's known. But Chris, you said earlier in the season that you think Napoli are going to win the league. Are you going to stick with that? And if so, why?
I'm going to go with them. They're free scoring. They have Higuain. I just think if they're there or thereabouts at the end of the season, it would mean so much to them. They'll absolutely pack out their home stadium. And I hope, actually, from a neutral point of view, they get over the line. It would be nice if it wasn't Juve. It would be nice if it wasn't Inter. I think they've won it recently a lot. And I just wonder what it could do to Napoli as a football club if they won the Scudetto again.
So that's our review of the Serie A season so far. A very, very open tight race indeed. Chris will be back next week. We're going to do a review of the Bundesliga season so far as well. We're going to look at Liga and the shape of that at the moment as that gets back underway next weekend. But we want people to tweet in, as we've mentioned, at FIE Podcast. What do we want to hear from listeners next week?
Well, the January transfer window is open, of course. What club needs to strengthen and where they need to strengthen.
Yes, indeed. So keep those tweets coming in at FIE Podcast. And don't forget to leave us a review as well on iTunes if you have the time. We'll be back next Monday.
This is Football in Europe.